Yeah, I mean, I think Mary Borden, my own view is that Mary Borden is one of the most extraordinary writers of the First World War, whether a man or a woman. I think her writing stands up alongside anything else. She had served, her story is interesting because she was born in Chicago, moved to London in 1913 when she was in her mid-20s. She became part of the suffragette movement. She got arrested for chucking a brick through the window of the Treasury during a demonstration. She had three children by the time the war broke out. But as soon as the war started, she wanted to do something. She wanted to respond to this sense of a humanitarian crisis. She came from a religious family. Just before the war, her brother had died in Egypt on the way to China. And he was to be a missionary, and she was married to a missionary. And she had done missionary work with her husband out in Lahore. And there was a sense of wanting, I think, to dedicate yourself to service. And her brother had literally died in her arms. He died of meningitis in Cairo. And when he died, he left $1 million. Shows you the sort of wealth they had. He left $1 million for missionary work. Today's money, that's about $25 million, including setting up a hospital. Set up a hospital for Muslims in China. And although he'd never been to China, he was on his way there. And I think this was probably quite an influential thing. So she decided that she was going to set up her own hospital. And she set up a hospital in Roosruger in Belgium. And then a second one on the Somme. And both of them very close to the fighting. And for French soldiers, because the British Army wouldn't have her. They wouldn't want this sort of well-meaning rich woman doing her own thing. And in the first 6 weeks of the Somme, she had 25,000 soldiers come through. And the extraordinary thing was that although she had no experience of nursing, no experience of running anything, her hospital had one of the finest records in the French army for patient recovery, and it was by all accounts an extremely well run hospital. While she was there, she wrote a series of stories, memoirs, and poems which she tried to publish, but which were pulled by the official censor. That was in 1920. And then after remarks from All Quiet on the Western Front came out, people were clearly prepared to talk about and read about the war again. And she decided to have another go at publishing it. She was by that time a pretty well-known novelist. She'd had a couple of really quite successful novels. And but she published a book called The Forbidden Zone, which didn't have the success of All Quiet on the Western Front or Goodbye to All That or Memoirs of an Infantry Officer from Six Sassoon or Hemingway's Farewell to Arms. It's a bit too complicated for that, and it's written in a certain modernist style. There's a sort of sense of she's not influenced by Rupert Brooke. She's not like Brooke influenced by Thomas Hardy or by Terne Tennyson and all that. It's not in that line that, you know, Brooke was in, Graves was in, Owen was in. She's in a very different line, which takes us from Walt Whitman to Gertrude Stein, really. So it's much more of a sort of free-flowing, almost stream of conscious writing that's not punctuated. There's no formal structure to it. Looks a bit of a mess on the page because of all the dashes and the long lines that run into each other. But there is something going on in those poems, I felt, that for a modern reader today, certainly to me, I thought this is compelling stuff because it's told with such urgency, such a rawness about the writing, such an immediateness and such passion and thoughtful anger about how things are, that deserves to be well known. And it's interesting how it's been sort of marginalised all this time. I think marginalised for a number of reasons. I said it's slightly modernist in its tone. It's not constructed in a formal way, so it's not a novel. It's not a memoir. It's a mixture of stuff. You don't know what's true and what's not true. Some of it is direct memoir, some of it is short story, and then some of it is poems. And of course she was a woman, and she was an American woman, and she wasn't saving the lives of British soldiers. She worked for the French army. And I think all of these things accumulate to a sort of, not consciously, but they've sort of, you know, edged her out of the story somehow. And so I was keen that we, you know, brought her story back in, because it deserves to be told and deserves to be heard. And I became intrigued by the fact that there was no book of her poems, and started to collect together from the stuff she'd published, but also stuff that was in archives. Now, fortunately, many of her papers have been saved, and there is another sort of, you know, interesting aspect to this story of her as a woman writer. They're saved because her husband was a general, and so her papers are saved as part of his papers.
How fascinating.
Yeah, and so we've got his papers, and in his papers are her papers. And so there are in her papers a number of unpublished poems. I've put some of those into this anthology, and they form, I think, an extraordinary account, because there are these free-flowing poems about nursing in the war, about the soldiers who came through and about them, their terrible injuries and about them dying. And they're written down as if she's just sort of can't write them quick enough, you know, between these busy shifts. And then she fell in love. She had a love affair at the Somme while her husband was off in another regiment. She fell in love with Louis Spears, who was a liaison officer between the French and the British High Command. And she wrote a series of love poems to Spears that were never published in her lifetime, probably for a number of reasons, but they're quite intimate, they're quite passionate. He was became a public figure, an MP. He later became a general in the Second World War. And it probably just didn't feel she wanted to put them out there. And so with the family's permission, these love poems have not been published until now. And so they provide this sort of counterpoint to the war poems, where she's got the one of these very strongly felt, urgent, passionate poems about nursing, and then she's clearly deeply in love with this young officer, and so she writes those as well. And we've got this sort of extraordinary counterbalance of love and war going on at the same moment. And her voice is really just beginning to get known, and I've been really interested by the response to this collection. And lots of people have responded to it and liked it. And it was wonderful that Myra Calix, when she was commissioned to write a piece for the Tower of London, their Beyond the Deepening Shadow project, and she chose one of the love poems from the collection and made an extraordinarily beautiful piece of music out of it. And it was amazing to be at the Tower, you know, and the centenary of the armistice, and to see these thousands and thousands of tiny flames fill the moat. And then the words of this young woman who'd gone to the war to try and save people's lives, not to go and kill people, but she'd gone there to try and rescue people. And to hear those words sung in the middle of London was quite an amazing thing.